pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way. No.
Final hour of the Jeff Poor Show today. This is Bradley J, your guest host. We have another special guest coming up in a little bit, but more to talk about first. The text line is open, 251-343-0106. Again, that's 251-343-0106. Would love to hear from you. President Trump spoke earlier about the migrants from Morocco overrunning Spain. If you haven't seen this video from yesterday, it's just absolutely jaw-dropping. So there's a it's surrounded by Morocco, but there's a Spanish enclave in Africa right on the other side of the Strait of Gibraltar called Huerta, something like that. I took 2 years of Spanish in high school at Monroe Academy, and in 2 years, we spent a year on past tense. We then spent a year on present tense, but we never got around to future tense. So my Spanish knowledge is not how I would want it to be, but I try to make do. But there's this small enclave of Spain contained by Morocco right there on the Mediterranean Sea. It has about 80,000 or so people there who are Spanish. It has been overrun by Moroccan migrants. Now, this African migrant crisis is, I mean, it's 10 years old at this point. Of course, they've been flooding Europe, transforming Europe forever. This is, of course, on the African continent. But this 80,000-person Spanish enclave, just as of early this morning, had 49,000 Moroccans flood across the border. Sure, it's continuing to grow. These people are seeking refuge, asylum. They're going to try to get to Spain. I mean, it's just absolutely wild. Trump was asked about it this morning by my nemesis, Jackie Heinrich, at Fox News, and Trump said, "It's terrible. Remember that picture. That's going to be us in 3 years if the wrong side gets in. If the Democrats get in, you will not live a very good life." And he's right. I mean, this is happening all over the world. This isn't just a United States problem. I think that, unfortunately, the United States politicians, the Democrats, and their often all too willing Republican colleagues welcomed this. Thankfully, there's been an effort to stop it. But, I mean, you look at a lot of these European cities whose characters have been forever changed, and look, nothing is permanent. I get that. The only thing that stays the same is everything changes. Was that Tracy Lawrence? But if you look at some of these European cities, like Paris, I mean, the no-go zones in Paris where police won't even go. They these areas that are just, you know, it's 100% Muslim. They're roving Muslim young men who are just seeking young non-Muslim women. I mean, it's very scary stuff. That really could happen over here. President Trump is right about that. The problem with unchecked immigration is when you bring people in such large numbers from, especially if they're from the same place, there's no incentive to assimilate at all. If you bring people in small enough numbers, then yeah, you have to learn English. You have to get to know your neighbor. You have to try to get a job. But if you look at, I mean, the best example is probably in Minneapolis at Little Mogadishu. There are tens of thousands of Somalians who live in almost a separate society there. There are areas like that in Colorado where these Venezuelan Tren de Aragua gangs basically own entire blocks. You have to pay your utility fees to them. You have to pay your rent to them. law enforcement won't go near them. I've talked to a woman who lived in one of these apartment buildings that were taken over. She had videos of that. I mean, just would truly shock you. These are how a lot of Americans have to live. God forbid that Mobile ever gets like that. But it's really scary, and Trump is right. This could happen anywhere. But if you look back at Minneapolis, at Little Mogadishu, look, elections have consequences. These migration issues, they're not academic. I think back to when Al Franken, the now disgraced senator who got Me Too'd in the early days of Me Too for a joke that was in poor taste. He was – if you hadn't seen the photo, fine. I'm not going to describe it on air. But when Al Franken first won his seat and defeated Norm Coleman, he won it by – I believe, I mean, he wasn't seated for months. I believe it was like 643 votes or something like that. He won that seat in a very, very close race there in Minnesota. At that time, there were well over 10,000 voting age Somalians in Little Mogadishu. And you know how they vote. You know how they organize and how they have other people cast their ballots for them. There's no doubt that because of our refugee program, Al Franken became a United States senator from Minnesota. And get this, Al Franken was the 60th vote on Obamacare. So these issues, they're not academic. They have real consequences. And Trump is right. This can happen to any country. Look, I think that the United States is a very special place. We have geographically and all that, fine, you know, within our borders, whatever. But we're a special place because of our heritage, our traditions, what we've passed on from one generation to the next. And yes, we bring people in from time to time who want to take part and join and assimilate into our culture and our country and be American. But when you bring in people in these types of numbers, there's no assimilation. I saw in the news today, I think it was in the Washington Post, they're complaining because some criminals who are illegal aliens are being detained, and they're lamenting the fact that these criminals' children don't speak English. I'm sorry. Yes, of course I feel bad for these children who I'm sure are innocent, but why are these people here? How does that benefit the American people to have this entire new class of people brought in who can't even speak the language, have no incentive to do so, and won't assimilate? And that's what this Chamber of Commerce class who wants this cheap foreign labor, I mean, it's slavery in another name. I mean, they truly want another class of citizens brought in, or not even always citizens, but another class of people brought in who are totally dependent upon the benevolence of their employers, who are often providing for them, you know, not just their cheap salary that's cheaper than, you know, that's driving American wages down, but they're also living in these, tenements that are arranged by their employers who want that cheap foreign labor. These people just live here to work, and then they have their entire separate society. How does that benefit John Q. Citizen? I just really don't think it is. But if you haven't watched this video of what's going on in Morocco, it's some really, truly scary stuff. One of the highlights of this week was Anthony Fauci, those fun hearings. And there have been some Republicans, again, these are the types of Republicans who see what happens in Morocco and probably don't worry about that. They're probably the same ones who are advocating for more cheap labor, more folks to come in. But Anthony Fauci, There's been a big battle between Trump and the Trump administration and the Smithsonian, which if you've been to Washington and you've seen these Smithsonian exhibits, it's so woke. The work they're doing is so woke. They talk about how these museum directors talk about DEI and how it has to be a priority in the exhibits and the mission of these institutions. It's just nonsense. But the Smithsonian exhibit, they have Anthony Fauci's signed baseball cap and this heroic placard, I guess you'd call it, on display at one of the Smithsonian museums in Washington. I mean, how misplaced can your priorities be, especially now that we know who this guy is, that Fauci has revealed who he is, not just with what he said and this week what he didn't say, but in that diary. We touched on it yesterday, but I mean the diary that he wrote. First off, if you're a grown man who writes a diary, I've got some questions. I mean, there's some legitimate reasons for it. There truly is. I've tried keeping some kind of a journal just to keep track of what happened. Some things I want to remember. Fauci's diary reads like some starstruck little elementary school girl talking about the celebrities that he'd met, the media personalities he'd spoke with. I mean, it was absolutely pathetic. I mean, this was a grown man. At the time of the pandemic, he was what, like 79 years old? First off, when you're that age, you shouldn't be in a position like that within the federal government. You're almost old enough to run for the United States Senate, but you shouldn't be a bureaucrat. I'm sorry, but the guy should have been shown the door a long time ago. But the way that – I mean, it's just like a starstruck little girl. No disrespect meant to starstruck little girls, but Fauci had some stuff seriously wrong with him. But it's clear that he lied to the American people. He lied to presidents knowing that it was overtly political. It was overtly to boost his own standing, to boost his own celebrity. And he made it very clear that many of the decisions he made and the advice he gave President Trump and other high-ranking officials in the White House and administration were to avoid an October surprise. He was trying to help the Democrat, who of course ended up being Joe Biden. He's trying to help the Democrat win the election over Donald Trump. I think Anthony Fauci is one of the most despicable Americans in our nation's long history. And the fact that the woke Smithsonian is lionizing this guy, that's a real problem. In a few minutes, in 10 or 15 minutes, we'll have a guest on who will speak a little bit more up to us about what the Senate is planning to do to hold Fauci accountable. And look, the guy's 85 years old. I don't think that we're going to see him go to prison or whatever. I mean, that's something that he deserves. But there are so many more Anthony Faucis out there who are waiting to have that kind of power, who are going to misuse it, people who are supposed to be public servants. And so Republicans need to continue to press this issue. Not only do they need to hold Anthony Fauci accountable to the maximum extent that they can, but they need to ensure that no other Anthony Faucis ever can do anything even remotely as serious as what Anthony Fauci did. And we have to root out these kinds of actors in the federal government. So we're going to hear a little bit more about what will be done in the as soon as next week, the Senate's plan on taking some actions against him. But we'll be back with that and much more on the Jeff Bohr Show.
Living on the road, my friend, was gonna keep you free and clean.
Counting flowers on the wall, that don't bother me at all. Playing solitaire till dawn with the deck of 51. Smoking cigarettes and watching Captain Kangaroo. Now don't tell me.
Welcome back to the Jeff Bohr Show. This is Bradley J. filling in for Jeff, who's again taking some much-deserved time off. The text line is open. Want to hear from you. 251-343-0106. Again, that's 251-343-0106. David text in, when you import the third world, you become the third world. Brother, that's the truth. Look, for so long, the Heritage Foundations of the world. Look, I understand that the Heritage Foundation has gone through some evolution over the past decade or so, much of it painful. But there is this class of business-friendly, and look, I'm not anti-business, but of conservatives who saw, or Republicans at least, who saw our nation as just, you know, a balance sheet and a GDP, who sold this lie that every single person on this globe is all the same. Everyone has value. Every culture is just the same. Yes, America's great, but America is great because we welcome everyone in. And I think that it's been a long, painful lesson for the nation to realize that that's not the case. Not to go all Carl Jung and on everyone, but look, there are definitely people across this globe who have not inherited that American worldview, who don't belong in a high trust society, who are inherently skeptical of their neighbors and will rob them or beat them at the first opportunity. People who just aren't consistent with American culture and who will not assimilate. I mean, won't go too far down that rabbit hole, but it is true. If you import the third world, it's not like waving a magic wand and all of a sudden these people go through Ellis Island and turn into Americans. Okay. America is special, not because we're a spot on a map, but because of how we were forged and what we've become. And yeah, it's been a bumpy ride at times in our history, but I still believe in American exceptionalism, and I don't want us to throw that all away because it makes some people feel good about themselves, or because some folks just want to import some cheap foreign labor. Another notable news item today, you had Senator Susan Collins, who we talked about before. Look, Susan Collins from Maine, she is not this rock-ribbed conservative. She's very much a centrist, one of those kind of old-school Republicans who's a little bit more aligned with the chamber. But she's from Maine, and Maine, that's probably, at least for now, the best that we're going to get statewide in Maine from a Republican candidate. But she left a meeting with ICE, I believe it was yesterday. The Senate is off today, of course, because it's Friday. All the senators flew home yesterday. Katie Britt was on my flight back to Montgomery yesterday. I didn't get the opportunity to talk with her. But Susan Collins left that meeting with ICE touting that there are going to be ICE body cameras in Maine, that the ICE was going to prioritize Maine as one of the first places where they were going to get all of their officers. I believe within the next couple months, all of their officers out in the field were going to be wearing body cameras. I think that's fine. The direction that ICE was going even before some of what happened earlier this year in January with Renee Good and whoever that other lunatic was. And I kind of wonder if some of these far left folks who are demanding body cameras kind of played themselves. You look at what's happened since law enforcement officers across the nation started wearing body cameras. Look, I don't know if it's a chicken or the egg thing, but we haven't. Remember, we used to hear, you know, whenever these, I mean, it was usually, you know, like a black man who was shot by police, and these self-interested elements started saying, "Oh, well, this was aggression," you know, not having any of the facts, just immediately defaulted, this is, you know, some kind of discrimination. Well, we haven't really seen much of that since police started wearing body cameras. You wonder if some of these narratives about ICE officers will be debunked once they all start wearing body cameras. I guess we'll have to see. We'll be right back on the Jeff Ward Show.
The barbershop pole, they set me up in the chair.
Welcome back to the Jeff Ward Show. This is Bradley J, your guest host. On this Friday, we're in the final half hour here in the little home stretch. We have a special guest on the line right now from the Washington Times, editor-at-large there, to tell us about some exciting things going on in Washington on a busy news week, Alex Swoyer. Alex, thank you for joining the Jeff Ward Show today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Always exciting here in D.C.
Oh, yeah. One thing, and we had been talking about this earlier. Look, obviously, so much attention, I think understandably so, on the Fauci hearings today or this week. It's not leaving the news anytime soon. Rand Paul has talked about wanting to take additional steps, maybe even a contempt vote next week for Anthony Fauci. What's the latest on the developments there? Where do things stand with Republicans trying to hold this very bad actor accountable for what he did?
Yeah, so I just interviewed Senator Rick Scott, and he basically said that they plan to hold that contempt vote next week, and he believes it will, of course, happen and be successful. He says there's no filibuster, so there's no 60-vote, you know, threshold, or they would need Democrats to, you know, like they do for the Save America Act, vote with them. So it looks like the majority could, in fact, hold Fauci in contempt. Then that would then be transferred over to the DOJ. And if you recall, Bradley, there is precedent for this. Not so long ago, Congress went ahead and held Peter Navarro, Steve Bannon in contempt, and both of them did about 4 months in prison. So it could be that this is the way to go about, you know, getting Fauci to talk.
Now, Alex, I know that in addition to having covered the Senate for many years, you're an attorney. You've covered the Supreme Court extensively. You've also covered DOJ and what's what goes on there, which at times is very complicated. There's a lot of politics in the maneuverings here. Do you think that even – first off, I'm a little skeptical that Republicans can get 51 votes in the Senate to hold Fauci in contempt. We'll see if that happens. But what would the next steps be were the Senate to hold him in contempt and send that over to the DOJ? What would happen there?
Yeah, so I'm glad that you brought that up. So basically, it becomes a legal proceeding at that time. However, aside from the contempt, because you brought up your questions about if the vote would even be successful, because we do have some squishy Republicans, of course, and those up for re-election, like a Susan Collins, may be put on the spot with this type of vote. You have other areas that the Republicans are looking at to utilize basically a district court to go after Fauci. One of the items that I think people hit on is when Senator Rand Paul was asking him questions, he specifically did ask questions related to between the years of 2014 and 2025. That is specific because that's where Fauci is shielded with his pardon. So the question then could become, you know, the issue presented to a judge is, could someone choose to use their Fifth Amendment rights when they're already given a blanket pardon for that specific issue and the question? So that's one area. The other, if you remember, Bradley, I'm sure this might, you know, ring a bell, is Lois Lerner. So she went ahead when she was testifying, delivered an opening statement, and then went on to plead the Fifth, just what Fauci did. So he tried to give his opening statement, you know, and then say, oh, wait, I'm not testifying. So that's another area that Republicans could take to a district court and say, hey, he waived all of his Fifth Amendment rights because he went ahead and started testifying. He made an opening statement. With Lois Lerner, that was in the courts. It ended up getting settled because the DOJ, of course, changed administrations. And so that kind of went away without actually being resolved by a judge.
So There's been a lot of questions on what the pardon actually protects him from. There's been a lot of speculation, and I'm not an attorney, that because he does have that pardon, he can't plead the Fifth because he can't incriminate himself because he's already gotten a pardon. I know that there are questions on whether the pardon is valid or not, but can you help explain that reasoning to me? I mean, did plead the Fifth lawfully, how does this work?
Yeah, I think that that's a good question. So basically, the reason I said it was specific that Rand Paul was asking questions from 2014 to 2025 about conduct and things that went on is because that's what the pardon shielded him from. So, you know, that separates that conduct. The thing that doesn't shield Fauci is his testimony the other day. If he said something previously under oath, and then he were to testify if he had, you know, spoken earlier this week, and he said something that was in conflict with something he said previously under oath, that could have potentially opened up the door for a perjury trap of some sort, those charges coming back for him. Because remember, the pardon was up until, I think it was the last day President Biden was in office, and he issued that preemptive pardon. And so it went from a specific date in 2014 all the way to, I think it was like January 19th, if you will, 2025. So anything after that, like earlier this week, would be fair game.
Rick Scott actually said this during the hearing. Fauci's pardons was one of those auto pen pardons. Isn't that right?
That is correct. And I think that that's one of those areas that the Republicans are exploring. Of course, you talked about not having confidence in them to hold him in contempt. I'm not really sure I have confidence in any sort of resolve from this auto pen issue. I think it would be new to the courts. Presidents have used auto pens in the past, but of course not as much as Biden. And now we have evidence through some of these tapes that have come out about his, you know, clear memory issue.
Yeah, and that opens up a whole other can of worms because, look, it's one thing if a president, like if you sign a document, if you use a pen, if you hit a button to use a pen, if you instruct someone else to hit a button to use a pen, okay, whatever. But the fact that we know now, even going back to 2017, that Biden was having these issues. Charitably, you can say he was having issues with his memory, but there is a lot of legitimate concern that he wasn't even the ones who was directing these pardons to be signed. I mean, you mentioned that this would be a new issue for the court to consider. How would that even move forward? Is this something that the Trump Department of Justice would have to begin to maybe invalidate some of these pardons and these other auto pen signatures from President Trump from President Biden? I mean, it seems like this would be a years-long process that we would never, ever see a resolution to. Is that right?
I think you're right. One of the things that would happen in, you know, Washington, there would probably need to be some whistleblowers, somebody who comes out and talks about who was behind the auto pen, you know, some examples of times they knew it was being used when Joe Biden was either incoherent or, not unknown to him, for example. We don't know. It seems like Republicans on Capitol Hill said that they were looking into this. Maybe they are talking to people, maybe not. But if they were, then, of course, I think that there would be a thorough report issued, and potentially then they could refer things to the DOJ. But like you said, that type of thing takes years to kind of come full circle. One area that I think is important to hit is I actually interviewed Senator Tuberville earlier this week, which I know is y'all's home state, and he soon to be governor. And he was talking about he really wants to see people in the states go after Fauci because his pardon is for federal crimes. But there are state crimes or state allegations that people could bring him into court. Some people have suggested wrongful death or, you know, there's a violation of the public trust. State law, there's different states have different laws that kind of are tailored to that. There's also, if you remember, Fani Willis over in Georgia, Fulton County DA that went after President Trump and his, you know, what was it, 17 other allies in under a RICO violation, like some state racketeering that they were in some sort of conspiracy. there's already questions about who Dr. Fauci was working with in terms of if he was covering up government documents and communications. There's been some of his allies, I believe, that are already facing some charges. So there could be some sort of RICO case that a state could build against Fauci as well that would get that would bypass this pardon.
Very interesting. Look, whatever they can do, I think Fauci is such an evil man. Moving to something else, look, the Senate is off today. There's been a lot of shuffling of papers back and forth between the DOJ and the White House and Senators Cornyn and Tillis, kind of the usual suspects who are always a thorn in the president's side. But it's all over Todd Blanche's confirmation. What's the latest here? Obviously, Tillis and Cornyn are trying to prevent President Trump from activating that weaponization fund. They're holding up the nomination over that. Are we going to see a resolution of this anytime soon?
There seemed to be a Blanche meeting with, I believe it was Tillis and Cornyn yesterday. There was talks that they had given and provided the senators with evidence, the DOJ, that is, that the fund was done. But then again, that vote was still delayed. So at the end of yesterday, it seemed like they had started to smooth things over. However, it looks like Tillis has gone on social media and said President Trump is still insisting on this fund. It looks like he's trying to find another way to still object to Blanche's nomination. You know, I covered Senator Cornyn for years in the Senate. I'm surprised by him going ahead and taking this route. He, of course, both men, if you recall, Bradley, voted to confirm Todd Blanche back like not too long ago as deputy AG. And that is one area that's important to note because he was confirmed as deputy AG, he can stay on as acting. There's not really an issue there. He can stay in his position. It's just whether or not he's going to get confirmed. You know, there's some people who are working behind the scenes with this whole issue and trying to push Todd Blanche forward, who said after yesterday evening, it sounded like they were going to move forward with it and it would be successful at the end of next week. I don't know if that's true or not. We'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, we'll be watching it. The Senate's only in session for another week, or only scheduled to be in session for another week before it takes a 5-week vacation. Obviously, we're at the very end of these last primaries. Tuesday, we've got Michigan and Wisconsin that are big. You've got Tennessee Thursday. Florida, there are a few more hanging out there, but we're kind of transitioning towards general election season. In talking with these senators, Tuberville and Rick Scott, did they provide a sense of how they feel about Republicans holding the Senate? Because with all of the sniping back and forth inside the Senate Republican Conference right now, I really don't know what Republicans' messaging would be to their voters, but where's the sense of where things are right now when we look forward to November?
I specifically asked Rick Scott this question, given that he used to basically lead the NRSC. And it was interesting. He says he believes Republicans aren't going to have a hard time holding the Senate and that they might actually pick up seats. Now, of course, that could be a talking point being put forward, and we can see. But like you mentioned, places like Michigan, where you actually see a far left progressive candidate backed by the DSA, El Sayed, he's like in polling, he's surpassing Stevens, it looks like, the more moderate candidate. And this is probably music to Republicans' ears. They might think that in purple states, which is trending more and more blue, like Michigan, that gives them a shot of picking up that seat. He pointed to Ohio. He thinks that that could be one. I think he's pretty aggressive with talking about New Hampshire. He was talking about that. He thinks Collins is safe, of course, now in Maine, which was something I think people talked about daily when Plattner was the focus. So, you know, he says that they're sitting pretty good, the Republicans, that is, in the upper chamber.
In the last couple of minutes we've got you, Alex. Look, I know you're an attorney who's, of course, covered the court. Definitely an eventful year as far as the Supreme Court goes. They're in their summer break right now. Is there anything that we could see either the administration or maybe on Capitol Hill in responding to some of these monumental cases from the Supreme Court, these monumental decisions? I think of birthright citizenship, of course, is one that President Trump has indicated he'd like to do something about. But will there be any remedies to some of these decisions on tariffs or the courts or whatnot that may not have gone Trump's way?
There should be. Before the opinion came out against President Trump on birthright citizenship, I was asking lawmakers, you know, what plan B they had, because the oral arguments went really poor for the administration. It was clear that Trump was not going to win that. And nobody really had a plan. Now it does seem like they're trying to piece together legislation that would at least kind of curtail birthright tourism. Or birth tourism. And, you know, one bill would deal with surrogacy laws, restricting those. You would think this would be bipartisan, but being able to prevent members of the CCP or those foreign enemies of the United States, like I think of certain oligarchs, for example, from using our surrogacy laws, which seem common sense. But right now there's only two Republicans sponsoring that. So, you know, hopefully that would be something that you could reach across the aisle on. Senator Scott said that they're looking at visa legislation, too, it sounds like. I think that was kind of rumors we've heard from some staffers as well. Maybe looking to the executive does have the power to curtail who can come in this country and when. So think about age. You could possibly limit the time to come during a visa based on, like, pregnancy years. Could you target pregnant women and say they cannot come in the country? That's a possibility, too. Of course, I think anything they do will end up being challenged in the court. This administration has faced more lawsuits. I think in the first 6 months, it was more than 500 for all the different actions that they've taken. So the element of lawfare we saw during the President Trump's 2024 election kind of carried over into his administration. So anything that these Republicans do to try to fix this situation that the loss with birthright, I think is going to end up being years from now fought out in the courts.
Alex Swoyer, editor-at-large at The Washington Times. Alex, we really appreciate you joining the Jeff Poor Show today. We'll be right back after this short break.
We never got rich. Daddy was a veteran, a Southern Democrat. They ought to get a rich man to vote like that. Singing song, song of the South. Sweet potato pie and I shut my mouth. Gone, gone with the wind. There ain't nobody looking back again. Send it on down the line. Hello, West Virginia coal miner. Let me thank you for.
All right, guys. Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show. This is Bradley J. We are wrapping up here pretty soon. It's been a fun 3 hours. Some remaining texts that came in from Creighton Aristotle. Hey, McCain was a military blue blood. He had no business getting an appointment to the Naval Academy. He could have killed Obamacare. Good show. Well, thank you. McCain, there's a lot of speculation, and some might say it goes beyond that. It's fact. I regret I'm not up to date on it, that because his father was highly placed in the military, that's why he was able to get an appointment to the Naval Academy. There's a lot of stories about just like the planes he crashed and everything when he was in the academy and in training. You know, to be young and entitled, I don't know. Dogface Pony Soldier, happened when he was running for the nomination. Everyone knew. Yeah, I mean, look, Biden, even at best, when he was a young man, Biden was far from a mental giant. If you read some of his contemporaries' comments about him, even long ago when he was a young senator, I mean, no one thought that highly of him. I mean, that's just not who he was. Have another text here. Founding Father John Jay wrote in Federalist Number 2, Providence has been pleased to give this one connected country to one united people, a people descended from the same ancestors, speaking the same language, professing the same religion, unquote. My opinion of the left's constant touting of diversity as being the supreme value is that it is not true and it is silly. I agree, unnamed texter. I'm actually somehow distantly related to John Jay, even though we have, for some reason, some Monroe Countyan many, many years ago, one of my predecessors who probably didn't know the King's English that well added an E to the end of J-A-Y. So my name is spelled J-A-Y-E. I can't tell you how that happened. But you know what? That's fine. I don't care. I'm love Alabama. Excited to be here today. I'm going to spend my afternoon here in Southeast Montgomery County catching up on some phone calls. I've got the 22 with some fresh ammo. I'm going to shoot at a couple of carp in the pond, maybe get the rod and reel out and try to catch some dinner that we can fry up. Feels good to be home. Hope all of you have a great weekend. Appreciate you joining the program today, the Jeff Ward Show. This is Bradley J. Everyone have a great weekend.